sort of more a bridge builder. So I think that's one of the critical things that I can offer is listening to everyone.
Democrat Sharon Cisna is trying to unseat Congressman Don Young. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 16th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the Elders and Youth Conference kicks off in Anchorage.
Youth and Elders Conference is putting confidence in the young people.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Breastfeeding leads to healthy babies and healthier mothers. Women who breastfeed are less likely to get breast or ovarian cancer, and babies get fewer ear infections, score higher on IQ tests, and are less likely to be obese as adults. The road to lifelong health begins with breastfeeding. Call 907-465-3100 if you have questions about breastfeeding. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services WIC program, an equal opportunity employer.
U.S. Senator Tom Coburn is deriding federally earmarked projects in the state. Coburn released his annual Waste Book report this morning. The report highlights government-sponsored programs, business and tax breaks that Coburn labels wasteful spending. He says the U.S. Treasury has propped up a ferry run by the Seldovia Village Tribe to the tune of $8.5 million. And Coburn highlights how the federally boosted ferry is hurting other private ferries in Seldovia Bay. He also points to the recent $33 million earmark for the Alaska Railroad as an example of why legislators in Washington need to ensure that federal funds go to worthwhile projects. The Alaska Railroad received the earmark for mass transit, even though its primary function is freight and tourism. Election Day is 3 weeks from today. Neither of Alaska's U.S. senators is up for re-election this term, but there is one statewide race that hasn't received much attention. APRN's Peter Granitz reports on Democrat Sharon Cisna's uphill bid to unseat Representative Don Young and what it means for her party in Alaska.
Sharon Cisna served 7 terms in the State House. A Democrat, she represented the university area of Anchorage. And as her final term was winding down, she was anticipating a return to her career as a counselor.
I came at this from a point of view of really wanting to move out into the private sector and really working hard at continuing the searches that my husband and I have been on to communities around the state and understanding what do they need and what are their challenges.
In 2010, though, Cisna experienced a well-documented run-in with the Transportation Security Administration. She refused a pat-down from TSA screeners and for 2 years has refused to travel through any airport that would require her to get a pat-down.
So I'm flying on smaller planes and getting to Canada and flying on Canadian Airlines if I have to go long distances because I will not allow myself to be abused, which I think is a very healthy attitude.
Cisna's crusade against what she sees as unconstitutional intrusions is taking a new form. She's trying to oust 19-term incumbent Don Young from Congress. And by any measure, that's a hard task. Financially, she's got pennies to Young's thousands. As of mid-August, Cisna reported having just over $1,000 on hand. Young had almost $570,000. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which tries to elect Democrats to the U.S. House, is not supporting Cisna. The DCCC did not respond to repeated calls and emails for this story, and on its website, it does not even list the Alaska at-large seat as a race. The state party did not return calls for comment either, and Sharon Cisna says she's had no recent meetings with the state party officials, though she's listed on the Alaska Democrats website. Ethan Berkowitz came closer to unseating Young in the general election than anyone in the past 20 years. He says there is no way any Democrat in the state will ever beat Don Young.
And until someone can make a compelling case why he's not the best spokesperson in Alaska, he's going to stay there. And we like our seniority in this state.
That seniority was stripped a few years ago when federal investigators revealed Young's involvement in a scheme to reward campaign contributors with earmarks. The Department of Justice never filed charges. Berkowitz says the Alaska Democratic Party needs to expand beyond Anchorage, a city he represented as the minority leader in the state house. And on top of that, it needs to define its own state-centric message. Because, he complains, state Democrats spend too much time fending off attacks against the national party, like the charge that environmentalists run the show.
We're a resource development state, like it or not. That's where the Alaska's bread and butter comes from. That's where our jobs come from. That's how people feed their families. The perception has to be that Alaska Democrats are going to fight for jobs and they're going to fight for families. They're going to fight to make sure that when resource development occurs, Alaskans are the prime beneficiaries.
And not only does Sharon Cisna come from Anchorage, she's not gung-ho about the drilling in the state.
We don't need to develop all of the oil and gas in Alaska in the next 5 years. Pretty sure we're going to need it in the future, and it will actually bring us more money later.
So party leaders have a candidate who doesn't necessarily fit the mold of what they want an Alaska Democrat to look like. Sharon Cisna is upbeat and engaging. She has a strong track record in Juneau, but her command of federal issues is shaky. She demurred when asked her thoughts on pending across-the-board spending cuts. And when questioned about extending the payroll tax cut at year's end, she had this to say.
Well, that detail, I'd want to know a great deal more than I would that I can really answer right now.
That was a similar answer to a question about whether to extend the Bush-era tax cuts or to keep them at certain income levels. Cisna says she'll surround herself with able aides who have expertise in these areas. She says if she's elected, she wants to end the partisanship in Washington.
I'm sort of more a bridge builder. I've been the co-chair of the Legislative Health Caucus now for 9 years. And what we've done is we've tried very hard to bring everybody together and everybody talking. So I think that's one of the critical things that I can offer is listening to everyone.
Washington, D.C. is not a town known for its listeners. And by most accounts, partisanship will only increase after the election. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
A pilot has been found dead in a downed plane near Squintna. The Alaska Air National Guard today found the pilot, whose name is not being released, after a search was initiated when the plane did not arrive as scheduled at the Nixon Fork mine near McGrath. The cargo plane was flying from Wasilla to the mine. When it never arrived yesterday, the guard was called in to help. Rescuers spotted the cargo plane about 60 miles from Squintna this morning. The crash is under investigation by the National Transportation Safety Board. A search is underway for another missing plane. Palmer pilot Brendan Mattingly was last seen at an airport in Soldotna on Saturday. Mattingly and his red, white, and green Piper Super Cub have not been seen since. Searchers from the Troopers, the Alaska Air National Guard, and several Civil Air Patrol groups are looking for the plane in an area between Soldotna and an airport near Palmer, where Mattingly was thought to be heading. But icy conditions and low cloud ceiling have hampered the effort. Authorities shot and killed a brown bear cub Monday on Chichagof Island. It's believed to be one of the three bears responsible for the fatal mauling of a Sitka man over the weekend. Sitka Police Lieutenant Barry Allen says a team performed a necropsy on the cub, but that the results are pending. A Sitka detective and two Alaska wildlife troopers spent Monday and today on Chichagof looking for the sow and two cubs spotted in Poison Cove. That's about 30 miles north of Sitka. The bears behaved aggressively on Sunday towards some boaters who came ashore to investigate an abandoned skiff on the beach. The partially consumed remains of 54-year-old Tomas Puerta were found nearby. Allen says once a bear kills and consumes a human, it could become habituated to the behavior. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage prepares for a growing senior population.
Many of us will require some type of in-home care, and having an adequate workforce to deal with that is going to be very vital for this community.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
An award-winning Tlingit carver has been cited by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for violating federal law. Archie Kavanaugh from Juneau placed art objects he had created for sale on the Internet. One of the pieces, a hat, used raven feathers, and another one, a headdress, used flicker feathers.
We had a call from a guy in Anchorage indicating he was interested in buying the raven hat. And so he did come down. He flew down from Anchorage down to here and gave us a $1,000 down payment on it. I didn't realize he was a sting operator for fish and wildlife.
Federal authorities told Kavanaugh he was violating the Migratory Bird Treaty Act in selling the feathers, and he was fined over $2,000. Kavanaugh could have been fined more than that and done jail time, too, under current law.
No people in Southeast University, Central Council, Sea Alaska, master, world-renowned master carvers, Nathan Jackson, Wayne Price, did not know there was such a law that would criminalize artists for using any kind of feathers on not only artifacts, art projects, but also regalia. Many of our people use feathers on their dance regalia for ceremonial gatherings and such.
Kavanaugh's case raises questions about the conflict of the law and Alaska Native traditions. Although the flicker feathers were a gift and the raven feathers came to Kavanaugh from a raven that was already dead, Kavanaugh still violated the law in selling the feathers as part of the artwork he created, according to Bruce Woods, a spokesman for Fish and Wildlife. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute has an interest in Kavanaugh's case and plans to bring it up at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention this week. Before the AFN convention, First Alaskans Institute is hosting the Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage. The conference began yesterday and gives elders and youth from around the state a chance to learn from each other and pass on Native cultures. Elder Marlene Johnson from Hoona has attended the conference since it began about 25 years ago. She says that back then only 50 or so people attended. Today hundreds of people pack the Dena'ina Center. She says the conference is a chance for youth to learn about their culture and about their own abilities.
Youth and Elders Conference is putting confidence in the young people, and it's showing them every day that we trust them, we like them, we want them.
Johnson says it also creates important connections between generations and helps bridge the cultural gap created by the generation of Alaska Natives who were sent off to boarding school and didn't learn their own cultures.
Thousands of young people were sent boarding home program from junior high all the way through. Some of them barely spent any time in the village after that because they couldn't come home for holidays. And then in the summertime, they got jobs or something.
One of the major gaps was in language learning. That was the focus for youth keynote speaker Peter Schwarzkopf.
3 years ago, I came here to AFN in this very hall, sitting like you are now. Not a clue. I had no knowledge of my language, no knowledge of my past. And then when we broke out into our language circles, I was struck with how limited we are with our language.
His experience at Elders and Youth inspired him to go home to Port Lions to learn Aleutic and to transcribe Aleutic songs into a book for future generations. Many of this year's conference workshop sessions focused on the different ways to pass on culture from one generation to the next through formal education and through building a sense of identity. The conference runs through Wednesday. The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention starts on Thursday. Alaska continues to have high dropout and death rates for children and teens, according to an annual report called Kids Count Data Book. KDLG's Mike Mason looked it over for this report.
The new report was prepared by researchers with the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research and it was sponsored by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. While there are some disturbing numbers in the book, there are some success stories in Alaska. Kent Spears is a policy analyst with Kids Count Alaska.
Alaska has continued for a number of years to be within the number one or number two spot of lower percentage of infant mortalities and babies born with low birth weight. We have traditionally been the number one or number two spot for that. So it's great to see that we continue with whatever it is that we're doing so that we're having healthy babies.
The data book also outlines the available data about child deaths. The most recent national data is from 2008, and it shows that Alaska had a child death rate of 31 deaths per 100,000 children. That's tied with Wyoming for the highest in the nation. The data book shows that over 4.4 thousand students in Alaska were classified as homeless in the 2010-2011 school year, which is up 31% compared to the 2008-2009 school year. The narrative for that section of the Kids Count data book reads that it's appalling that thousands of Alaska schoolchildren don't have regular homes, especially the more than 500 who are living in cars or campgrounds or other places where no one should have to live. Spears says it was important to include that sentence in the data book.
It surprised and continues to surprise us here at Kids Count Alaska how many children are living in cars, campgrounds, hotels, motels, with absolutely no secure nighttime residence.
The data book also includes detailed information about poverty and other economic factors impacting kids. For instance, in 2010, 13% of Alaska's children lived in poverty. That's the lowest rate in the nation, but it's up from the 11% in 2008. The authors of the data book stress that the poverty data does not account for the effects of Alaska's higher living costs. Spears says resources for children living in poverty are more easily accessible in the lower 48 states.
So when we're talking to our counterparts about the situation here in Alaska, we're happy to report that it's getting better for children, but comparing us to investments that have been made and new policies that have been put into place might still not be enough for kids living in Alaska. As we know, food prices are higher, transportation prices are higher, fuel is higher.
Kids 18 or younger make up nearly a third of Alaska's overall population. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Bioneers in Alaska, presenting practical sustainability strategies for Alaskans at its 9th annual conference, October 26th through the 28th at UAA. Bioneersinalaska.org. The Kinnickarm Bridge would create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnickarm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority.
State health officials say providers in Alaska have received drugs from the Massachusetts pharmacy behind the deadly outbreak of fungal meningitis. Alaska providers have not received any of the injectable steroids that have been linked to the deaths of at least 15 people and the illnesses of more than 200 people in other states. But the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is advising health providers nationwide to contact patients who have received any injectable drugs from the New England Compounding Center after May 21st as a precaution. The providers in Alaska who have received the drugs have been notified. Affordable housing for elderly citizens remains scarce in Anchorage now that the municipality is home to almost half the senior citizens in the state of Alaska. To help, Anchorage's NeighborWorks cut the ribbon on its new 20-unit senior housing complex in the city's midtown in mid-September. The new Connolly Square opened to music and fanfare. The senior housing project, with 20 units, is already at capacity, since many seniors on a long waiting list for affordable housing were ready to move in. The units will be available for tenants before the holidays, according to Debbie Mahoney, the executive director of NeighborWorks. The nonprofit builds and rents low-cost and affordable housing in Anchorage.
So affordable is kind of a tricky word. We usually say that we work with people that need low to moderate income housing.
Some senior citizens don't have much more than Social Security income. Mahoney says most of the tenants for the new senior complex are women, although a few couples will share the comfortable one-bedroom apartments. NeighborWorks received a $4 million grant from HUD to build the complex.
The great thing about the HUD program is that there's the capital for the construction of the building, but there also is project-based rental assistance, and that's what helps operate the building because we're only charging the residents up to 30% of their income. Their income might be just $12,000 annually.
But 20 units is barely a blip on the radar of upcoming senior housing needs. Linda Meyer is Senior Services Coordinator for the Municipality of Anchorage. She spoke at the Connolly Square grand opening.
We are in the midst of a silver tsunami. In the next two decades, baby boomers, all 76 million of us that were born between 1946 and 1964, will be turning 65 years old.
Meyer says Anchorage now is home to 41% of all the 60-plus-year-old people in the state. And the city is scrambling to address the needs of an increasingly aging population. In her office, overlooking busy L Street, Meyer says the recent numbers on seniors in Anchorage and in Alaska denote an unprecedented demographic shift in the country. By 2030, one-fifth of the residents of Anchorage will be 60 years old, and that presents challenges in housing and transportation, among other areas.
As our population continues to grow older, will be access to medical care. I think we also in our community will be looking at a workforce issue as well, training up and hiring enough people that will be available to care for an aging population.
That goes along with recent views on elder care, which have shifted from nursing home care to community-based care. As the need grows for more medical personnel and assistant staff to help oldsters who are living independently, Meyer says doors open for employment opportunities.
Growing older does not necessarily mean that you're going to need assistance, but what we do know is that as we become old, say 85 and older, many of us will require some type of in-home care. And having an adequate workforce to deal with that is going to be very vital for this community.
Some senior housing complexes, like Connolly Square, do not provide nursing care for its residents, but tenants are allowed to bring in any type of help that they need. Meyer says home and housing is the foundation on which long-term support services are built. NeighborWorks is planning to build a larger senior complex to address that need. The two candidates for the newly created legislative district that represents Sitka, Haines, Hoonah, and Angoon met in Sitka last week in a forum sponsored by the city's Chamber of Commerce. KCAW's Robert Woolsey attended, and he filed this report.
Representative Bill Thomas of Haines is an 8-year veteran of the legislature, but a relative unknown, at least politically, in Sitka. The Republican served as co-chair of the House Finance Committee in the last session and hopes his strong ties to the fishing industry and the native community will win Sitkans over. His opponent, 23-year-old Jonathan Christ Tompkins, is a lifelong Sitkan, the product of local schools and Yale University. Christ Tompkins has been active in Democratic politics since childhood. He told the Sitka Chamber that he'd like to restore integrity to state politics and to protect the interests of Southeast Alaska. The candidates answered a variety of questions prepared by the chamber, but used every opportunity to distinguish themselves from each other. Thomas emphasized his seniority on the Finance Committee and the powerful partnership it would create if Senator Bert Stedman, who co-chairs the same committee in the Senate, were reelected.
Having people in finance is a place to have your representatives and legislators. I look back to the days when you had Grusendorf and Lyason. Great things happened in Sitka. You have that chance again to have it happen. But you need to have people in the right spot and understand what your issues are. And you're not going to get addressed if you're not in the majority or sitting on fine. You'll bring it up, but nobody's going to listen to you. I've been there too long to know that your voice is pretty silent.
Christ Tompkins criticized Thomas's support of the governor's proposed oil tax reform, which would ease taxes on Alaska's major oil field producers. He suggested that Thomas and other legislators who supported House Bill 110 were putting the interests of the oil companies ahead of the interests of their districts.
Alaska gets all its money from oil. We're an oil state. We have reliance and dependency on oil. And if we give away $2 billion a year, which is what the State House voted to do this last legislative session, we have no money for renewable energy projects. We have no money for Blue Lake. We have no money for infrastructure and harbors, marine services. And so I think for Southeast Alaska and Alaska as a whole to survive, we need investment in these core projects and communities, and we need the money to make that investment. And I would be strongly committed to making sure that Alaska has a strong financial future by making sure that we protect our fair share of revenue from the oil that we, you and I, and the state of Alaska all own. And that means protecting oil revenue to make sure we can reinvest it in communities.
The candidates were also pushed into their corners by questions from the chamber audience, which highlighted the four decades that separate the men. This is forum moderator Dan Jones.
What is your experience as an employer and or business owner or manager? And then, what job experience do you have that qualifies you to create family wage jobs in Southeast Alaska? And this says, Jonathan goes first.
I think one of the things that's changed in the last few decades in America really is if you want to go save the world, it used to be that you would go join up with some nonprofit, Oxfam, Red Cross, you name it, and you know, go to Africa and try to, you know, provide humanitarian aid or something. And I think people in my generation now approach problems in the world through an entrepreneurial lens, and that there's tremendous potential through the private sector to affect major problems that we face. And the startup culture is something that is very much of my generation.
Thank you. In my 65 years, I've had many, many jobs in order to make ends meet. I was involved in a village corporation, longshoring, and know what it takes, both in logging and longshoring, and know what it takes to sit in a room to create jobs and economic opportunity and benefits for the working man.
Republican Bill Thomas and Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins are vying to represent the newly formed House District 34, which includes the communities of Sitka, Haines, Angoon, Cake, and Heidelberg. The general election is Tuesday, November 6th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Ronco and Robert Woolsey in Sitka and Mike Mason in Dillingham. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Ann Hillman from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.